I'm Steve Potter, and welcome to Cityscape. Later in the hour, Mustard Seed Theater's production of All Is Calm, The Christmas Truce of 1914, an a cappella musical based on a true story from World War I. And we'll also talk to North Carolina artist Clark Whittington, who turns old cigarette vending machines into art dispensers. He has more than 100 of these machines scattered across the country, and now there's one in St. Louis. We begin with the St. Louis International Film Festival. This year, the annual event runs from November 14th through the 24th, screening something like 330 films from around the world. Renowned director Oliver Stone will make an appearance to accept a Lifetime Achievement Award. And here with an overview, Cliff Freilich, executive director of Cinema St. Louis, which puts this whole event together. Hi, Cliff.
Hi.
Nice to see you again.
Great to be here.
Oliver Stone, perhaps best known for his film on the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and very timely as we observe the 50th anniversary of that.
Right. That was the reason why we sought him out. He's been a director I've admired for many, many years, but this seemed like a perfect opportunity to reach out and see whether or not he might like to visit and be paid tribute to himself with a Lifetime Achievement Award. But we didn't realistically have expectations that he'd say yes. But by some miracle, and this was really serendipitous, he was going to be in St. Louis anyway.
Really?
On November 22nd to do a speech at a social studies convention that's being held here, not on JFK, interestingly enough. So he readily said, sure, we'd love to do it. So it couldn't have been a happier coincidence.
Someone up there smiling down on the festival, I guess.
Indeed.
He'll be doing some other things while he's here, too.
Well, he'll be doing that speech. That, I think, is only for convention goers. Uh-huh. But then we'll be doing a presentation in which we give him the award. He'll also do a 45 minutes to an hour conversation with Joe Williams, the film critic for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He's going to show a clip from, about a 20-minute clip from The Untold History of the United States, which is his Showtime show that he did in conjunction with Peter Kudnitz, who is also going to be in town. That's about Kennedy himself, and it'll precede the actual director's cut of JFK. So it's a really packed evening. You have to strap yourself in. It's going to be about a 3.5 hour to 4 hour program.
I look forward to that. Well, something like 330 films from all around the world. Would you sort of give us an overview?
Sure, as much as is possible. Every year, of course, we scour the globe. We don't physically go these places, but the films come to us. This year, we even have a film that deals with Antarctica. So we're everywhere, literally, this year, I think. Every continent is touched. And we have a mix of international films that's built into our title, but we also do a lot of American independent, and we have a really large selection of documentaries. We consider that a particular strength of the festival because just down the road on I-70, we have one of the best documentary film festivals in the world in True False. We feel we need to at least compete on some small level to keep up. And then shorts, which you can't really see anywhere other than at a film festival unless you're watching it on your own home computer screen.
Well, several other filmmakers, in addition to Mr. Stone, will be honored during your festival. Receiving the Charles Guggenheim Cinema St. Louis Award will be Los Angeles-based director A.J. Schnock. His past films include Kurt Cobain, about a son, and a documentary, A Tale of Two Johns, which is about the band They Might Be Giants. Well, he has two films in this year's festival, We Always Lie to Strangers and Caucus. A.J. Schnock joins us on the phone from New York. Welcome to Cityscape.
Thanks for having me.
And A.J., you're in New York, I guess, on business, film-related, I guess?
Yeah, Caucus actually opens tonight at Lincoln Center, so we're having a great opening weekend with some conversations with different political types, and including someone from the Santorum campaign and the senior White House correspondent for CNN and a few others. So kind of have a nice weekend to kick off the film in New York City.
And the Village Voice had some nice things to say about that film.
Yeah, that was great. They said Critics' Choice, and it was very interesting. They certainly came at it from a more liberal point of view, but we actually just did some screenings in Iowa where we shot it, obviously. And a lot of Republicans and conservatives saw it there and really liked it and thought it was incredibly fair. So it's nice to bridge the political divide in these polarized times.
Someone needs to.
Yeah.
So Caucus actually is about the Republican primaries during this last presidential election.
Yeah, it's just we focus just on Iowa and the candidates going there and kind of the unusual role that Iowa plays in our presidential nominating process. But also, you know, it's a fascinating look, I think, at both how difficult it is to run for president and how these candidates, you know, they arrive in Iowa and they've run for congresswoman from Minnesota or senator from Pennsylvania or governor of Texas, and you know, they think, well, I've campaigned before, I know how to do this, and then they get to Iowa and find out, like, oh, it's actually a completely different animal to run for president in Iowa. And watching them kind of learn on the job is one of the fascinating things, I think, that happens in the film.
Yeah, and it focuses primarily, does it not, on Rick Santorum and Michelle Bachmann, and I guess Mitt Romney, too.
Yeah, certainly Senator Santorum and Congresswoman Bachmann had the most interesting trajectories in Iowa this last time around. You know, Congresswoman Bachmann is an Iowa native. She landed in the state in first place. Her campaign was sort of firing on all cylinders. And then suddenly the wheels just started coming off. And then she had this kind of long descent where she ends up in last place in the end. And Senator Santorum has the exact opposite. He starts off with no one giving him any thought or any possibility of winning, and then at the very end wins by 34 votes. So it's quite interesting seeing the two of them juxtaposed within the film.
Yeah, never a dull moment. Cliff, what are your thoughts on this film?
I was shocked, quite honestly, at how much it takes an even-handed view. I think that most people would go into the film thinking, oh, it's going to be liberal filmmakers who are taking pot shots at the Republicans. And certainly that would be easily done with that particular field. But the film is actually quite respectful. And particularly in regard to Santorum, I think people will be, and AJ has talked to me about this, will be quite surprised at how sympathetic of a figure he emerges, even if you are diametrically opposed to his political point of view.
Was that something you intended to do, AJ? I don't know what your politics are. It doesn't really matter. But I'm sure you have a point of view. So did you try not to have one?
Well, we wanted to make a classic cinema verite political film and be really observational. And I think part of our goal was, you know, if we could capture each of the candidates at one point or another at their best, you know, we wanted to be respectful to the idea that, you know, somebody was voting for each of these people. And not just one person, but, you know, thousands of people, even if they came in last place. So if we gave everyone kind of their best moment, I think it freed us up to then, you know, be really honest and observant about what happened through the rest of the process. And, you know, in the case of Congresswoman Bachmann, you know, she made mistakes. And I think the film shows those errors and shows the reason why she ends up losing and coming in last. But we also try to show what a charismatic and dynamic speaker she can be and how, you know, one-on-one she can be a quite charming figure.
Have you had any feedback from any of the candidates that you featured?
Well, Senator Santorum has seen it, and he really likes it. You know, certainly it's a lot of it is his story, and it represents a very special time in his life and his family's life, and he wins. So I can see why that's something he enjoys. I think I'd love for all the other candidates to see it. I'm not sure who has and who hasn't. Their reactions may vary depending on, you know, what their personal view of how Iowa went for them was.
We're talking with director A.J. Schnock and with Cliff Frelick from the Cinema St. Louis, the St. Louis International Film Festival. Well, as I said, the festival opens on November the 14th, which is a Thursday. And the festival actually opens with another one of your films, We Always Lie to Strangers. And I have to kind of laugh because when I first saw the title, I thought maybe that was the political film.
Yeah, no, We Always Lie to Strangers is a film about Branson, Missouri. I spent 5 years there with my fellow filmmakers, David Wilson and Nathan Truesdell, not 5 years straight, but going back and forth between Los Angeles and Branson, and just really wanting to capture what it is about that particular place. I'm sure your listeners are very familiar with it, but what is it like as a performer to live and work there, and particularly if your music interests or your political interests are different than people's public perception of what Branson is?
Yeah, you know, I was able to preview just about the first 15 minutes of it yesterday, and I really enjoyed it. And I have to tell you, I haven't been to Branson since like 1970, when I was like a freshman in high school or something. And I didn't like Branson then, and I'd had a lot of preconceived notions. But after watching your film, I sort of got a whole different impression of it, in a positive way.
Yeah, I think Branson's a really unique and remarkable place. And, you know, I think for folks who've only kind of been thinking about what they've heard over the last 15 years, there have been a lot of new things and changes to Branson. They're certainly trying to reach other kinds of audiences. But to me, what was really interesting was just meeting the people who are there. And you know, and I guess even I, who I tend to go into things, I hope, with a very open mind. But I might have had a preconceived idea that, well, if the shows were simple, let's say, maybe the people running them weren't like entirely sophisticated. And that was quickly dashed, like within the first day of being there and realizing, like, oh, no, Branson is what it is because the people who do these shows are incredibly smart, sophisticated, and know how to give people the entertainment that they're looking for. Yeah. And that was something that was repeated, you know, all the times we went back. That's, I think, one of the things that's in the film is saying, there may be hillbillies on stage, but the people behind the scenes aren't hillbillies.
Right. What do you think about that, Cliff? And do you have a Branson story of your own?
I have not been to Branson since I was a child, and that was in its prehistory. But I would echo your perception in that the film will surprise a lot of people who would anticipate perhaps that it will be, again, sort of sophisticated filmmakers poking fun at the rubes, which could easily be done again in this case. But it's very respectful, and I think people will really enjoy the people that they meet.
And AJ, I don't know if you intended this, but the way your film, We Always Lie to Strangers, sort of begins that way, because I almost think it's this unsophisticated thing at first, because the film opens, it's, I guess, it's a porch of a building. We see some guy playing a stringed instrument out on a porch and a dog walking by. And then you sort of get a little deeper into it and you see the big productions and the work behind the scenes. And you profile a lot of groups, and some of them are like family groups that have been there for a while and who are very successful.
Yeah, I mean, we focus on four families, and two families that your listeners may be familiar with are the Presleys, who, of course, they were the first family to have a theater on the Strip and one of the oldest shows in Branson, and the Lennon family, you know, who were well-known from the Lennon sisters being on the Lawrence Welk show, and they moved. They have a very, very large family. It's hard to keep track, but they moved half of their family in the 90s to Branson to be able to do these shows. And I think, you know, just kind of seeing that was a very interesting juxtaposition just between those two families, both of which are large and have a good sense of family amongst themselves and wanting to perform with one another. But on some levels, they're very similar, but on other levels, they're very different. The Lennons, for example, are, you know, liberal California from Venice Beach, you know. And so to see them sort of as both a fish out of water going into Branson, but also then they become incredibly respectful of the traditions of the Ozarks and want to learn a lot about the traditions of the Ozarks. And a lot of what the film ends up being about, I think, is the connections that people make, not just to one another, but to the history of the place that they're in. I mean, that's even where the title comes from. It's an old Vance Randolph story about, you know, people thinking that, you know, the hillbillies are telling this big, tall tale. And Vance Randolph goes up to them and says, well, why'd you tell that tall tale when the tourists were around? And the hillbillies say, well, you know, we always lie to strangers. Yeah. And so I think it's an interesting thought about what it is to be a performer, and certainly what it is to be a performer there.
You bring out the point, you mentioned the Presley family, and I found out from watching your film that I didn't realize that they've been there since something like 1967, which was probably around the time Cliff and I were there.
Yeah, indeed.
And I remember Branson back then, it was like just that one main highway road with a couple of theaters, and that was it. And boy, it's changed today. One of the Presleys is actually the mayor, and you do some things on her, too.
Yeah, she just was reelected this past spring with, I think, something like 75% of the vote or something. She's a really remarkable woman, and, you know, I think it's really a kind of a great person to see Branson through her eyes, because she married into the Presley family, so she's not a performer on stage, but has that connection both to the show as well as to, you know, where is Branson going and what's it going to be, you know, in the coming years and decades.
And you mentioned the Lennon family, and they're related to, a lot of people will remember the Lennon sisters, who I guess Lawrence Welk brought to the national stage.
Yeah, the Lennon sisters were, I'm sure many of your listeners remember, but very incredibly popular through the, you know, the 60s and 70s. They had national television shows. You know, they were as big as anyone I think you could think of. And, you know, they, as a family, made this decision to move in the, you know, early 90s and go to Branson and have the opportunity to perform both the sisters at night and three brothers, Dan and Bill and Joe, and Bill's wife, Gail, did a show in the morning. And that was something, you know, where they were all in their 40s and older, living in Los Angeles. And the opportunity to perform daily in this small town in the Ozarks was, I think, something that none of them could have predicted, and certainly they didn't all predict that they were going to, you know, pack up and move to Southwest Missouri.
Cliff, I want you to think of maybe a scene from We Always Lie to Strangers that you might want to ask AJ about. And while you think about that, AJ, I wanted to ask you about one. I can't remember who this person was, but you can tell me. I thought it was interesting. There's a bit in the movie, a scene with a mother and daughter, when I say daughter, little girl, and they're performing in, it looks like a food hall or something?
Yes. Well, one of the things that some of the shows do when they're struggling or wanting to draw an audience is that they will go to, that I think was a timeshare community where they have, you know, like breakfast or lunch where people can come and get food, and then people come from the shows and do a song and pitch their show and then hand out flyers or discount tickets or something. And it is a way for some of those shows to get the audience to come out. And so that particular show, which was called the Magnificent Variety Show, they were just relaunching their show in the Osmond Brothers Theater. And that was one way they were hoping to get the audience out. And it was, again, a family show with a husband and wife and their young daughter all performing with a bunch of singers and dancers.
Cliff, is there a scene or an aspect of the film that strikes you?
Well, again, I think one of the things that will surprise people is the diversity of Branson itself. Well, one of the performers that's featured is gay. That's not something that we would typically think in terms of because Branson sells itself to some degree as being wholesome family
entertainment. So when you say gay, you mean like openly gay?
Yes. So I think there will be a sort of a surprising diversity of people represented on screen as performers. And I'm sure that AJ and David Wilson, who were the co-directors, very much sought out that aspect, not just focus in on one part of Branson.
AJ, you said you spent 5 years, though. I don't know if you'd ever been to Branson before that, but your thoughts, opinions, feelings about Branson must have evolved over that period, too.
Yeah, no, I'm like you guys. I went when I was a kid. You know, I went to Silver Dollar City and, you know, rode on the big giant slide on the strip when I was probably 5 or 6. But, you know, most of what I thought of Branson, my mom, Lorraine, lives in Edwardsville, and, you know, she would go down and with her friends, you know, probably once or a year or every other year, and I'd hear her, oh, we went to see 3 shows today, and oh, we went to see this fiddle player. And to me, it just seemed like, I'm like, you're seeing 3 shows? None of it made sense to me. Like, it just, not just the public popularity of Branson, but I couldn't even wrap my brain around how Branson operated. So when David said, you know, I'm interested in making a film about this, I was sort of interested immediately because, A, it was something that was in the popular culture, certainly in the Midwest. It's very well known, less so sort of on the coast. I was sort of curious in my own way of wanting to know, like, what is this place and how did this place become what it is? You know, the film isn't a history lesson. You know, we're not really trying to explain Branson, but it was certainly something I was curious about when I went there.
Well, whatever you did worked, because for the first time in like 40 years, I want to go now.
Yeah, no, it's great. The food there is fantastic. That's one of the best things. Is they've got some really tremendous food options in Branson. We try to, at the end of the credits, we have a little tag suggesting some places to go eat. So.
AJ, you mentioned Edwardsville, Illinois. You actually grew up there, didn't you? And aren't you going to screen the movie there at some point later?
Yeah, we are. Both films are actually screening at the Wildy as part of the festival in Edwardsville on Sunday. Cliff, you might have to help me.
17th.
18th, is that right?
17th.
And I'll be at both of those, and that's really exciting because the Wildy obviously is where I went to see pretty much every movie I ever saw as a kid, and then when I got to be a teenager, I went to go see stuff at the Tivoli, and that's where opening night is. So it's not only a great chance to get back to St. Louis, but, you know, a real nostalgia tour for me of my favorite theaters.
And again, your films, We Always Lie to Strangers, that film will open the festival, and Caucus also, could you give us more on that?
Caucus will play on Friday evening, that's the 15th, at Plaza Frontenac, and then as AJ mentioned, both Caucus and We Always Lie to Strangers will play at the Wildy on Sunday the 17th.
Well, what's next for you, AJ?
Right, just, you know, getting these films out is kind of the thing I'm focused on right now. I'm trying to find a new project for next year, so we're trying to launch something new and get the movies out both Caucus theatrically, and we have a bunch of special screenings coming up for both films in the coming weeks and months.
We Always Lie to Strangers, and that one you make an interesting point near the beginning that there's more, I can't remember exactly how you put it, but there's more to see in the United States. You know, when we think of hot spots in the United States, I think you talk about the coasts in Florida, and you make the point there's more to tasting what we have here to offer in the country than those places. And you're talking about Branson, the Midwest.
Yeah, I think that was one of the interesting things. Dan Lennon actually makes that, one of the Lennon brothers makes that observation that, you know, if you're thinking about America, you know, certainly you think about, you know, Chicago and New York and Los Angeles and Florida and all those things, but you don't really get a full picture of what America is if you don't include both, you know, small-town life as well as a place like Branson that I think is something that's very, very unique. I don't think it exists anywhere else in the world.
Well, A.J. Schnock is the director of We Always Lie to Strangers and Caucus, two films in this year's St. Louis International Film Festival. A.J., thanks so much. We look forward to seeing you when you're in town.
No, thank you. I'm really looking forward to it.
Thank you so much. And Cliff, before you go, I know in addition to all these films, you do workshops and other events over the period?
That's right. We have lots of free events, including a couple of workshops. So one, if you're interested in independent filmmaking, we have one of the pioneers of American independent filmmaking, whom we're also honoring with a Lifetime Achievement Award, John Jost, and another Missouri filmmaker, Blake Eckard, both of whom together will be offering a workshop at Webster. But we also have lots of free screenings, Human Rights Spotlight, children's films, a whole variety of events. So even if you can't afford the price of a ticket, you can always find something to see almost every day. In fact, I think every day of the fest, we have some free offering.
The 22nd Annual St. Louis International Film Festival, November 14th through 24th, various times, various locations. And if you go to stlpublicradio.org to the Cityscape page, we'll have a link to your website. And also, you have a guide, I know, in the Riverfront Times.
Yes, currently on the stands is the Riverfront Times with our guide stuffed in the middle.
And I want to point out, too, that over the next couple of weeks, we're going to feature interviews with people who are involved in other films of the festival, both here on Cityscape and on St. Louis on the Air. So we look forward to that. And Cliff Frelich, thank you so much for coming by again and previewing what always is an exciting time here in St. Louis for lovers of film.
Thanks for the opportunity.
You bet. Coming up next on Cityscape, vintage cigarette machines that now dispense art. And later, a musical based on a true story from World War I. This is St. Louis Public Radio.